and I want to welcome everybody to the webinar today. And we're in for a real treat because we do have Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. And in way of understanding who Dr. Tenpenny is, I'll give you just a little bit of information and then we'll move right into the webinar. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny is the founder of OsteoMed 2, an integrative medicine clinic located near Cleveland, Ohio, which focuses on women's health, elimination of chronic pain, and a unique method for asthma and allergy relief. Patients from 38 states and 9 countries have regained health through methods applied at OsteoMed. Dr. Tenpenny is a writer, a published author of 2 books, Saying No to Vaccines, and FOWL, and that's spelled F-O-W-L, Bird Flu, It's Not What You Think. She speaks at conferences here and abroad, has produced several educational DVDs, and is an international consultant serving on many national and international advisory boards. She is known for her, I got a frog in my voice today. She is known for her ability to present complex, scientifically researched information, including the hazards of vaccination, concepts rarely portrayed by conventional medicine. So with that, I want to welcome to the webinar Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. You're there with us, are you not, Dr. Tenpenny?
I am. Good afternoon.
Great. Well, it's wonderful to have you here. I know I've wanted to have this happen for a while now, and now here we are. And it's really interesting because right away what I noticed is that we had a number of questions that were already waiting in the queue well before this webinar began. So, I think if it's okay with you, if we can do it this way, maybe in way of folks understanding who you are a little bit more, if you could share a little bit about yourself and how you came around to do what you've been doing and to be where you are today. Would that work for you to do that?
Sure. I think it would be good to start with that and to give the people who may not know my whole background a little bit of information. And then I love the idea of just launching into the questions that are already there because, to me, to do webinars and things like that, the most important part is to get people's questions who are taking time out of their busy days to listen. So I like that format a lot.
Okay.
My background is I did what I consider to be my first life in emergency medicine. I was board certified in emergency medicine, the director of an emergency department for 12 years, and did just about everything in that conventional medical arena that an emergency medicine doctor does. I ran a 3-county emergency medical system, an EMS system, a 4-county mental health transportation board with the police department and the sheriff's department, and was president of my ER corporation at the same time. And then in 1994, my business partner and colleague, Dr. Dave Fronczek, died of kidney cancer, and he was only 32 years of age. And when Dave died, I knew that there just had to be better things in practicing medicine than just patching people up in the emergency room after they were broken. And about that same time, there was a rising interest in alternative and integrative medicine. And so I moved to Cleveland in 1996. And I started an integrative medicine practice here in Cleveland. And like you said at the introduction, we focus on allergy elimination, for which patients have come from 39 states and 9 foreign countries to get their allergies eliminated in our clinic. We do women's health, including bioidentical hormones and breast thermography. I have a board-certified holistic gynecologist that works with me in the clinic. And then we do a really aggressive pain management where we use a variety of techniques, osteopathy, chiropractic, acupuncture, and we use an acuscope to eliminate acute and chronic pain problems. And I've been in Cleveland here since 1996. Then in September of 2000, I had the opportunity to go to the National Vaccine Information Center meeting in Washington, D.C., their second annual meeting on vaccination. And after I left that meeting, I said, gosh, how did I miss this? I come from 3 generations of chiropractors, and I've never been vaccinated as a child, and I had measles, mumps, rubella, chicken pox, pertussis. I had all of those things, and I'm here to talk about it. Why is this such a big deal? Maybe I ought to look into this a little bit further. So starting in September of 2000, I started looking at the Centers for Disease Control, the CDC's documents, and I found that they were, the first couple of papers, I said, gosh, there's got to be more to this industry than this, which has led me to spend pretty close to 10 years of my life now reading and exposing all of the problems that have to do with vaccines. I've written two books. The second book is called Saying No to Vaccines, which refutes the 25 most common reasons people think that they should vaccinate, and it gives parents ammunition to stand up for their rights to choose and to say no. I published two DVDs, and one of the DVDs, the Risk-Benefit Choices DVDs, we've sold tens of thousands of those copies over the last 5 years, and they've gone all over the world. I've had published articles that have been in newspapers and magazines all over the world about the problems associated with vaccines, and I've even testified in federal court for patients that are injured from vaccines to try to help them get compensation. So as it turns out, my life now is pretty busy between radio and television interviews and writing, and I still see patients in the clinic 2 days a week right now, but that's probably going to be winding down in terms of new patients because everybody in my clinic has 10 years of experience with me. They've been trained by me, and all of my patients are going to be shortly transferred over to the patients in my clinic as I go on to do other things in my life. So that pretty much brings me up to now, and I spend a lot of time still educating patients about vaccines, why they're a problem. This whole swine flu thing that just happened over the last 4 months, I did more than 70 radio interviews in the last couple of months and turned down probably that many more because there just wasn't enough time to do them all. And I have a very, very active Facebook page for those of you that are listening. Maybe some of you even joined us through because I put the announcement up on Facebook, where it's facebook.com/vaccineinfo will get you to my Facebook page about vaccines, where we have a lot of activity there and a lot of questions that get answered every single day.
That's great. That boy, wow. There's so much, and I know so many things that so many directions we could go in and a lot of material to cover. And like you said, I think it's great that we have people with questions ready to roll out. And so let's just go ahead and jump right into them and see what folks are wanting to know. Let's see. Let me just scroll down to where I can start on this. We have Tiffany and Whittier. And Tiffany asks, I just wonder about the TB skin test. I can't seem to find enough info on it. My friend who does not vaccinate still gets the TB skin test because she doesn't consider it a vaccine. I say you're still injecting an antigen under your children's, in my case, skin, and I'm very uncomfortable about it. Are they safe, or should I have some case for concern?
That's a really good question, and it comes up a lot, particularly for people that are in the healthcare industry, because a lot of people that work in hospitals, nursing homes and extended care facilities are required by their employer to be tested for TB. I've written a big, long section of that in my book, Saying No to Vaccines, because the person who wrote the question there's a couple things. Number one, it's not a vaccine. It is just a test. But the test involves injecting mycoplasma, a type of a microbe that's kind of halfway between a virus and a bacteria, a microbe underneath the skin to see whether or not you react to it. And as a matter of fact, even if you've been exposed to the microbe somewhere along the line, you can have a false positive test. So there's a lot of false positives, and then if you are in this test, and if it shows out that you're positive, they want you to be put on medication for a year, and the side effects of the potential side effects of some of those medications can cause liver failure. So a lot of nurses ask me every year, and people in the healthcare industry, what can I do to avoid the TB test? Well, there's a couple of things. One is you can fill out a symptom form, and you can agree to get a chest X-ray. And if you have no signs of any symptoms and your chest X-ray is negative, that covers about 90 to 95% of potential TB and TB carriers. There's another test called the QuantiFERON Gold, and it's that's in the book. It's called QuantiFERON Gold test, and it's a blood test that's approved by the CDC that is actually more specific for identifying underlying TB problems and TB conditions than even the TB skin test is. Unfortunately, not very many hospitals and not very many people know about that test. But if you go out to the CDC's website and find the information, or you take the copy out of my book to your employer and say, I want to get this blood test done to test me to see whether or not I have any issues with tuberculosis, then since it's an approved test by the CDC, they should be able to provide that for you so you don't have to get the TB skin test.
Okay. Richard Diaz from Westford, Massachusetts, ask, why did the flu vaccine adjuvant go from aluminum to squalene or squalene?
Well, it didn't. I mean, the flu shots don't have aluminum in them. They never have. And none of the flu shots that were used in the U.S. had squalene. So let's back up a little bit. Flu shots have always had mercury in them. And this year, there was about 10 to 15% of the flu shots, the annual regular flu shots, were made without mercury because they were to be given to children under 1 year of age and to pregnant women. But multi-dose flu vials have always had mercury in them and still do have mercury in them. And the sad part about it is that now Novartis and Avenis have both said that next year, because the demand was low, I cannot believe this, but they said that because the demand was low, they were not going to make any flu shots next year that would be mercury-free. So aluminum is not an issue with the flu shots. Mercury is. Squalene, which is an oil-based adjuvant that causes huge inflammatory reactions, and there's 30 years of research showing how injecting oil into the body as an adjuvant can cause a lot of debilitating arthritis and a lot of other types of autoimmune-type symptoms. But they were going to use it, so that's what squalene is. Squalene was not approved for use in the U.S. and was not put in any of the U.S. Flu shots. However, it was put in flu shots used in Europe, in the UK, and used in Canada. And Novartis has a new flu shot factory that's already under development. In fact, they had the first stage of the opening of that factory in November. That next year, the flu shots in our country will probably be approved to have squalene in them. Now, they put squalene in the flu shots because then they don't have to use as much of the virus. So if you've got, you know, a gallon jug of virus and you want to make that gallon jug expend to like 100 gallons, you have to take a smaller amount of that virus. And in order to do that, you can do that by adding squalene or adding an adjuvant into it. So that's part of the reason that the squalene has been used. So I just wanted to clear that up, that about the whole issue with flu shots and what's in them.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of confusion, and I know even in the media many times you'll get distortions from either folks that work with the media and give reports, or people they interview, and I've seen a couple of YouTubes where they were interviewing someone and they said the mercury is absolutely safe, and you know, mercury is, in fact, one of them was even saying it's good for you to have that small amount of mercury. And I was just shocked at that whole thing.
Yeah, it doesn't matter that there's, you know, 30 years of research and thousands, and I mean that, thousands of published articles in the environmental health literature about the toxicities of mercury and how mercury, if you took a chunk of filling about the size that would be in your back molar, and you took that little chunk of filling, which is about 50% mercury, and you threw it into a small lake, that lake would be contaminated and no one would be allowed to eat the fish that comes out of it, no one would be allowed to swim in it. But if you put mercury in a filling in your mouth, then it's safe. Or if you put mercury in a vaccine and inject it, it's safe. I mean, it's just you know, pregnant women aren't even supposed to eat tuna fish because of the amount of mercury that might be in the tuna fish, but it's okay to give them a flu shot that has mercury in it as of next year. I mean, it's really kind of crazy when they have this silo amount of information and they don't go across the board and look at all of the scientific research and apply it to the human body. It's really sad.
Well, gee, doctor, you don't think it has anything to do with entrenched systems and the amount of money that runs through those entrenched systems?
Oh, of course not.
No, it wouldn't. That's ridiculous. What a superstition. We have Michelle in Maiden, and Michelle asks, do you believe there is a cure for cancer?
I believe there's a cure for cancer, and I believe the cure for cancer is don't get it in the first place. And I think that there's an awful lot of things that you can do for health in terms of keeping your body healthy, the food, the water, the air, the toxic emotions that you would have in your system, all of these things to keep you, the cure from cancer is to not get it in the first place. And I'm old enough to remember when I was a kid, I actually remember hearing television ads that actually said that. But then instead of raising money to find the cure, I can remember television ads that said, find the cause that is the cure. And they were raising money to find the causes for cancer. But once they identified the fact that the causes for cancer were heavy metals and pesticides and environmental toxicities and crappy food and all of the stuff that's in our environment now and vaccines and drugs, it's like, oh, well, we can't blame those things because if we did that, we'd take our entire industry out. So let's shift our money raising and shift our focus from finding the cause of cancer and stopping it to finding the cure for cancer once you get it. And let's redefine prevention instead of prevention meaning don't get it in the first place. Prevention now means let's find it early. Early detection is the best prevention. And so we've got a really distorted thing about cancer out there, which, you know, finding a cure isn't going to mean anything. Because if you have cancer and you get treated for cancer and you get chemo, radiation, and surgery, but you don't change your lifestyle, your food, your environment, and eliminate whatever anger, resentments, bitterness, and toxic emotions you have in your life, then you've just gone through a pretty toxic and challenging treatment, but it just might come back.
Well, gee, doctor, you know, if everything was able to be prevented, what in the world would the drug cartel and the medical cartel do for business?
Well, wouldn't that just be too bad?
I think so.
We'd have to, like, figure out something else for them to do. And maybe they could do something really important, things like help third-world countries get potable water, help third-world countries have sanitation and education and give them things like solar power and wind power and things that they can feed their villages with and keep them from getting sick. I mean, what if they took all that $500 billion a year where they manufactured synthetic plastic pills and had us as the repository of their product line, you know, cramming pills down our throat and injecting stuff into our arms? What if they took that $500 billion a year and did something really remarkable for the planet? Wouldn't we just have a great little blue ball to be living on?
We would. I like that vision. That's great. Michelle and Hickory ask, it's two questions in one, are there any supplements to detox mercury, and do you believe vaccines can cause infertility?
Oh, well, let's make sure we address that, both parts of that question. The first part about getting rid of mercury out of your system, I mean, there are natural products, things like chlorella and things like garlic. And there's some homeopathics that can be used if you're working with somebody who does homeopathy that can help to get the mercury out of your body. If you're working with a holistic practitioner and an integrative medicine doctor, and there's two, pardon me, prescription medications that can be used. One is DMSA and the other is DMPS. And both of them, I think, have their place in mercury toxicity, but you should be working with a physician or a holistic practitioner that's been trained in how to use those medications, what kind of side effects to look for, and when they're appropriate and when they're not. I don't advise doing that just on your own. So, yes, there's ways to get mercury out of your body. One of the difficulties is measuring how much mercury is actually in your body. Because when you get mercury either injected in a vaccine or you ingest mercury from tuna fish or from something else in the environment, it doesn't live in your bloodstream for very long. So getting a blood test to test you for mercury almost always, unless it's a very acute exposure, meaning it just happened like very recently within the past 4 to maybe 12 hours, you will never find mercury in the blood. Or if you do, either it was acute or the levels are so high that even your blood cells are contaminated, because 90% of the time or more, you're not going to identify mercury in your or aluminum or any of the other heavy metals in a blood test. And that's because it's very toxic to the bloodstream. And as soon as it gets into the bloodstream, it gets stuffed into your tissues. It gets put in your liver and your kidneys and your bone marrow and your bones and into your brain. So it's difficult to identify how much mercury you actually have in your body. And even when you go through a chelation process, the end point of determining when it's all out is really challenging. And so working with someone that's been trained in heavy metal toxicology or understands these processes, if you're going through a mercury or a heavy metal detox, I think is really important. If you don't have access to that type of practitioner and you want to do at least some gentle detox on your own, things like garlic and chlorella and homeopathy, and there's some homeopathic remedies available online or in health food stores, you can start that process slowly on your own. The second question, I believe, was, do I think that vaccines can cause infertility? Is that correct?
Yes, that's it.
Okay. Vaccines have the DPT, the diphtheria tetanus pertussis vaccine, and the Gardasil vaccine both have a component in it called polysorbate 80. And that's kind of a stabilizer that they use. And polysorbate 80 has been shown in female to cause infertility in female mice by causing atrophy of the uterus and the ovaries. A new recommendation from the CDC and the American Academy of Pediatrics that just came out yesterday said that in 2010 they are now recommending that the Gardasil vaccine also be given to little boys. And polysorbate 80 has been shown to cause testicular atrophy in little male mice. So now we're going to be giving a vaccine that's very toxic, has a lot of side effects, a lot of deaths, a lot of neurological problems with it, the Gardasil vaccine. We're going to treat a condition that doesn't even happen until people are in their 40s. And we're going to be giving this vaccine to little girls and little boys when they're 9, 10, and 11 years of age. So when they do get into their 20s and they want to think about having children, but they've got atrophy of their ovaries and atrophy of the testicles and the part of the testicles that makes the sperm, nobody's ever going to be able to go backward in time and point to the Gardasil vaccine, because the window of opportunity for blaming a vaccine is only 3 years. So I think that there's a real big problem, and parents really need to understand this vaccine, and they really have to understand why it's so important to say no. This is not a contagious disease. It is not going to prevent cervical cancer from happening. In fact, one of the main researchers of the Gardasil vaccine said that we would have to use Gardasil every year and do Pap tests every year for 80 years to start to see a decrease in cervical cancer and to be able to attribute it to the use of the vaccine. So it doesn't prevent cervical cancer. There's only two strains of virus in the vaccine to address cervical cancer, and there's at least 6 other strains that can cause cervical cancer. So it's very important, very, very important for all of you that are listening to this webinar and this conference call today to get other people to listen to this, because I believe they're archived, and so other people will know that this is definitely a vaccine you do not want to have.
That's, you know, that's really good, Doctor, because I believe that when you do experience important, crucial information, that it does need to get out far and wide. And many of us have circles of influence, and we have, a lot of us have email lists and what have you. So if we can circulate these out, then that's going to be that much more good that will be done in the direction that we want to move things towards greater awareness of what's going on and more freedom of choice and how we work with our own health. So, okay, we have Allison in Chester. Conventional medicine offers chemotherapy and radiation as viable cancer treatments. What are effective alternative cancer treatments? How does one access these treatments / facilities? Do you believe cancer is caused by a fungal type infection?
Let's stop.
Okay, sure.
This sounds like it's going to get really long. Let's do the first three of those parts first there, okay?
Okay.
The conventional medicine offers chemo and radiation and surgery as a viable option because it's the only option. From conventional medical standpoint, that is the treatment for cancer. First is surgery and then radiation and chemotherapy. You cut it out and then you kill all the cells that may be around that where you cut it out from, and then you do chemotherapy ostensibly to kill all the cells that may have leaked out from that site and gone into the rest of the body. Back as long ago as the 1950s, there were laws that were passed in California and some other places that if you treated cancer by any other means except conventional treatments of chemo, radiation, and surgery, the doctor could be subjected to felony charges. So finding alternative medicine and alternative treatment cancer modalities that have had to find their way outside of the country. So most of the cancer modalities that I'm aware of that work from an alternative perspective do what we already kind of talked about. They get in, they open up the lymphatics, they clean out the colon, they clean out the liver, they boost up the immune system, and they act to mobilize the body's defenses to fight off this thing called a cancer that got started in their system. And unfortunately, there aren't a lot of treatment centers like that I'm aware of outside the country. There's some in Germany. There's a couple in Czechoslovakia. There's several in Mexico. But you have to travel to be able to do that. And I think that those are, and it's really hard because a lot of times that people have already experienced and already gone through conventional treatment of surgery, radiation, and chemotherapy. They've got stage 4 disease, and they're on death's door, and then they make the decision to say, oh, well, now maybe I'll see if alternative medicine can help me. And it's too late. It's most of the time too late because the immune system has been destroyed. What was left of your liver and kidneys in terms of detoxification organs have been damaged. And so by that time, they turn to alternative medicine. And then if it doesn't work, I mean, if the person dies, alternative medicine is the one that gets blamed for not saving them. And I've always found that to be quite interesting.
I know I was just thinking that because it would receive the blame and even make the claim that, see, this alternative quackery actually killed the person.
Exactly. And then was there another part to that question? I just didn't want to get too far down the question there.
They did say something which kind of follows on the heels of something you were just saying. When I think of radiation, I think of cancer, so I don't understand how this works in fighting cancer. And then they ask, how does one access these treatment facilities, and do you believe cancer is caused by a fungal-type infection?
I think that in some cases it's fungus, but I think that, you know, it can be a virus, it can be bacteria, it can be, like in breast cancer, I'm convinced that all breast cancer starts from iodine deficiency in the tissues. I mean, there's enough literature out there now that talks about the iodine deficiency in the ducts of the breast is where the tissues start to break down and then can be invaded by viruses, bacteria, heavy metals, and other types of environmental chemicals that can further break down the tissues and cause the tissues to start to develop abnormally, which is what cancer is. So do I think it's a fungus sometimes? Because I think that fungus, you know, when your body is very, very acidic, when you've gone from a neutral place of pH and you've gotten more and more toxic and more acidic, that allows these funguses that normally would not grow in the body to start to proliferate and replicate. So I think in some instances there probably is, if not a fungal cause, at least a fungal component.
Okay. All right. We have Phil from London. Phil's a very often participant in these webinars, and we hear from him good input and questions. It says, hi, Earl and Dr. Sherry. This is a topic very close to my heart as I am in the wellness industry. I have seen over the years the absolute corruption within government and pharma. Codex Alimentarius is on its way to you guys. This is a NGO European body whose avowed intention is to stop your access to nutrient supplements. DSHEA, your right to supplements, will be abandoned in America. The chair of Codex is Dr. Rolf Grossklaus, a physician who believes that nutrition has no role in health. This is the top guy for Codex nutritional policy, and he has stated that nutrition is not relevant to health. This is a lie based upon junk science. This person runs a consultancy which charges Codex for his advice. Are we stupid or what? Last year, over 100,000 Americans died from a prescribed drug. Michael Jackson and Heath Ledger are just two to name. To my knowledge, no one has died from a nutritional overdose in recent years. How much more are we going to take? You have 545 in Congress responsible for every problem. Kick them all out before it's too late. As always, their best wishes. Any comments on that?
I just agree with everything that he said. I mean, it's like, how can anybody say that nutrition has nothing to do with health? I would like to know what this guy eats. I mean, if that's the case, then why even bother to eat food? Why not just, you know, eat linoleum or something, you know? I mean, if it has, what you put in your mouth has no bearing on health or disease, I mean, why even bother to eat food?
Yeah,
that's ridiculous.
Yeah. And on the other hand, he'd probably say that all these drugs that you put into your mouth and into your body have tremendous effect and do wonders. So,
and sadly, I think a lot of people think that too. I mean, if you watch the commercials on television, I mean, my husband and I just sit here and laugh and roll our eyes when you see these happy people, and then you listen to them peel off the side effects and complications. It's just pretty amazing. The side effects, you know, like there's an asthma drug, I think it's Asthmacort, that they talk about that they say when they talk about the side effects that it could worsen your asthma and it could cause you to have death from your asthma, but yet it's supposed to be treating your asthma. And I think that sometimes I'll see patients in my clinic and they'll come in and they'll say, I'm just here for my knee pain, and other than my knee pain, I'm perfectly healthy, and there's nothing else wrong with me. And then I look at their history and they're on 5 prescription medications. And somehow we have equated symptom-free with health. And it's symptom-free because of a medication, and somehow because we aren't complaining of an ache or a pain, that somehow we define that as health. It's amazing how the drug companies have gotten into our thought processes and have warped our logic from thinking of how that could be possible.
Lisa in Folsom says, Dr. Tenpenny, I have heard you state before that taking 5,000 IUs of vitamin D3 is helpful to ward off the H1N1 virus and other illnesses. I'm wondering how much vitamin D3 is safe to take during pregnancy, and is it the same dosage throughout the 3 trimesters?
The first part of that is about vitamin D. Vitamin D3 is sometimes I feel like a broken record. When people ask me what should I do for something, I say vitamin D and lots of it. And the reason is because once I really started researching it, I spent a couple of days just pouring through the medical literature and found more than 5,000 published articles on the effects, the positive effects of vitamin D3 in the body. And it affects the hormones and just about every other organ system that you have. It boosts up your immune system. It's important for your hormones. It's important for you, Lisa, in pregnancy. It's important for maintaining the health of your uterus and the health of the ligaments that hold up the uterus, and it protects you from having preeclampsia, which is hypertension during pregnancy, and the list is just seemingly endless. What I would say is, as a pregnant person, you should get a baseline 25-hydroxy vitamin D level, and that's for everybody else who's on here too, because people are always asking me, how much should I take? Well, I don't even know for sure what to tell them if I don't know what their levels are. I can say a safe level is up to 10,000 units a day all year long, because there was a study that was done that looked at people taking 10,000 units of vitamin D every day for 365 days, and not one single person showed sign of toxicity. So I think that taking 5,000 units or more is safe for everybody, except for people that have sarcoidosis, and for people that have cancers that cause their body to their levels of calcium to go up. So when I say it's safe for everybody, I'm meaning safe for everybody that is generally healthy and doesn't have cancer or sarcoidosis. Those you should be talking to your doctor. If you have those conditions, you should be talking to your doctor about level of vitamin D, and you should definitely get a blood test to know what your levels are. In terms of pregnancy, I would say at least 5,000 units a day during the winter time, but particularly if you're in the normal northern climates, and you should get a baseline to see where you are, because I've had patients in my office that even were taking vitamin D, and they had a baseline level of vitamin D like around 10 or 11 or 12. And what you need to have is a level, your vitamin D level needs to be at least 50 and preferably somewhere between 60 and 80 to be therapeutic enough to keep you healthy during the winter.
Okay, that's very good information for folks.
And let me add one more thing to that, why that's really important, that you personally, people who are listening to this, need to know what your number is. Because sometimes when you get blood tests done at the doctor's office, the nurse will call you and say, the doctor reviewed your test and everything looks normal. The problem is that the blood test for the vitamin D level, the 25-hydroxy, the 25-OH vitamin D level, the normal range that comes back from the lab will say 20 to 100 is considered normal. So if your blood test comes back at 30 or 35, the nurse may call you and say, the doctor said your test is normal, which it is not. It is in the normal range for that lab test, but it's not therapeutic for keeping you from getting sick. So it's very important to ask the question, thank you for calling, what is my exact number? And know that that number needs to be at least 50 and preferably somewhere between 60 and 80.
Okay. I want to, you know, invite everyone to join in the conversation, and you know, we've had some excellent questions, and this is a great opportunity for Dr. Sherry Tenpenny to share some excellent information with us. And if you have called into the conference bridge line, then just dial *2 on your phone keypad, and we'll see that you have a question and be able to unmute your line. If you're listening via the internet, there's a question box on the same page there. Just type your question in with first name and city and state, if you would, and hit submit, and we'll see that question and ask it. And with that, I'll go ahead and move on to, we have Michael in Panorama City. Michael asks, which private corporations or companies and which people are controlling our medical/health care industry?
All of them. I mean, the people that are at the top of all of the major drug industries, I mean, there's probably 20 of them. But the main ones are like Merck and Aventis and SmithKline-Beecham and Eli Lilly. And, I mean, they're the big boys. I mean, they and the people who are the heads of all of the major insurance industry, I mean, there's probably 20 or 30 major insurance companies in the country, things like Humana, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Aetna, New York Life. I mean, those are the all of those get together. Probably the big insurance purchasers in the country, so some of the large hospital systems that own like 20, 50, 100 different hospital systems that have to purchase health insurance for their employees, all of them, they all sit around and make those decisions. All of them. There isn't one.
Okay. Jason in Green, New Jersey says, I am a military reservist that is trying to avoid the swine flu and seasonal flu shot because I know it is ineffective, dangerous, and in the case of H1N1, untested. I found a religious exemption in the DOD regulation on vaccinations that I am preparing to submit for. But I was wondering if there have been any recent legal actions related to the military's requirement for H1N1 vaccination that I could use as justification to avoid getting the shot or spray.
To my knowledge, there haven't been any recent legal actions. I know that there have been some pending things that are trying to wind their way through the court to stop using our men and women in the military and in the reserves as guinea pigs and pin cushions for whatever the pharmaceutical industry wants to do trials on and to cram into these young, healthy people who are dedicating their life or volunteering a portion of their life as a reservist to do things to serve our country. I don't know of anything like that. And probably the best thing at this time of year is, have you had the flu? I mean, if you can show proof that you've had the flu, then perhaps you could get out of getting the vaccine. And you have to have a commander or a flight surgeon, I don't know what division of the service that you're in, that would support your right to refuse the vaccines, because once you are already in the military and you've already had other vaccines, it's really virtually impossible to implement a religious exemption after you've already become a member of the military. If you file a religious exemption before you become a member, then you have a better chance of that holding up. But after you're already a member, it's really almost impossible.
Okay. Let's see. We have Lori in Springfield, Vermont, says, how do you test for excessive fluoride consumption?
How do you test for it?
Right.
Is that what it says? Well, yes. There's a urine test that will test daily consumptions. It's not a very accurate test, but there's a test that's done through a company in Chicago called Doctors Data that they can test. They can do some preliminary testing to find out how much fluoride is in your system. But the bottom line is the fluoride's bad, and you don't want to have any of it in your system. So if you can avoid fluoridated water, do it. Do not give your children fluoride capsules, which I know that some pediatricians will recommend because they say that the kids have well water or they're not getting fluoride out of the tap water, so they try to give them fluoride capsules, which fluoride can be a combination carcinogen, and it makes for weak bones. So any amount of fluoride that you have is not good. So testing for it, to seeing how much you have, I'm not sure it's relevant.
Yeah, just avoid it. It seems like that might cover fluoridating teeth, like dentists will sometimes recommend.
Yep, exactly.
Okay.
So there's a couple of really good websites that talk about fluoride, and they have these fluoride action alerts that are really good. And, you know, there's a lot of activity that are going around in communities all across the country of people that are trying to get their municipalities to stop fluoridating the water, because fluoride is a waste product from the aluminum industry, and they've shown in large studies, even back in the 1920s and 30s, when they compared the cavitation rate of the rate of cavities in populations that had towns that had fluoridated water versus towns that did not have fluoridated water, the incidence rate of cavities were the same. So, you know, doing things like brushing your teeth and staying away from white sugar and and perhaps even chewing some gum with some xylitol to cut down on the bacteria in your mouth, and eating good food and taking, you know, nutrients is the best way to keep your teeth healthy, not by putting a known carcinogen in there called fluoride.
Absolutely. Jen and Charlotte says, how can you get rid of, it looks like saying fibroids on the uterus naturally?
Well, fibroids are estrogen stimulating, or the fibroids are a condition that happens in your uterus that are there because of estrogen stimulation. So once you get past menopause, the fibroids generally shrink and either go away or they get to a much smaller size than during the ages of where you were actually menstruating. There, acupuncture, I've seen acupuncture work to shrink down fibroids naturally. I know there's some homeopathics that can work. And there's a supplement called calcium D-glucarate, and it's the glucarate part, G-L-U-C-A-R-A-T-E, glucarate. It's calcium D-glucarate that can lower the estrogen levels naturally, and it's about 500 milligrams three times a day. And it's not about the calcium. Calcium's the carrier. It's only about 30 milligrams of calcium in calcium D-glucarate. So you still need to take your calcium and magnesium supplements, but the calcium D-glucarate helps to lower some of the estrogen levels. And that's a real simple thing that anybody can use for uterine problems, or use that sometimes if you've got like premenstrual headaches, like for the 5 days before you start your period, it's because of an excess estrogen level. Sometimes taking calcium D-glucarate during that period of time will help with that too.
Okay. It's interesting because right at the same time, these two people are asking almost the same question, Lynn and Asheville, any advice for fibroids, natural treatment? You just covered that. Okay. Kyle and Newton, Susan Summers' new book, Knockout, gives several alternative cancer clinics in the USA. That's all they say. So any comment to that?
Nope, I haven't read her book, so I wouldn't have a comment on that.
Okay. Sure. And then Doralee in Centennial, Colorado asks, can bacterial infections such as UTI or UTI, I believe, or UT1, whichever it is, be successfully combated by the immune system, or what supplements can cure them?
You know, I will answer that, but I just have to chuckle at the major interest that people are having on all these alternative medicine things since the topic of the day was supposed to be about vaccines. I just find it really amusing, and not that I mind answering the questions at all. It just tells me how hungry people are for information on these topics. So I'm glad to be of service that I can answer all these different questions for people along with their vaccine questions. But back to the question from the person who wrote that in, there is a supplement that you can order online, and some of the health food stores even carry it. It's called D, like the letter D, like in David, Mannose, M-A-N-N-O-S-E, D-Mannose. And it's a type of simple sugar that binds to the bacteria in your bladder and carries the infection out. The most common bug that causes bladder infections is E. coli, and like 90 to 95% of all bladder infections are caused by E. coli, and D. mannose is almost 100% effective for eliminating E. coli infections because the D. mannose gets absorbed into the surface coating of the bacteria, and the bacteria then can't cling to the inside of the bladder and multiply. If your infections are caused by some other type of bacteria other than E. coli, the effectiveness of D. mannose goes down to around 60%. People that have chronic bladder infections, they can take D. mannose all the time. A lot of times with women that may have get bladder infections after they have intercourse, they can get up and take several capsules of D. mannose before they go to sleep, and that helps them to cut down the possibility of a bladder infection. It also comes as a powder, so you can use it with little girls that have bladder infections. On the side of the bottle, if you have an acute infection, on the side of the bottle, it gives you a protocol that you can use to treat even an acute infection if you don't want to go to the doctor and get an antibiotic.
Okay. It looks like this is a further asking of a, of a, or of a question that was asked before, Michael Panorama City. Who are the heads, the CEOs of these companies, the people we can hold accountable? We need names. We know they're working together. We need to get specific. I don't know if you want to go there or what.
Well, I don't really know. I mean, I don't know anybody any more than anybody else does. I don't have any insider information on that. I mean, the accountability, I mean, you can't sue the government, so therefore you can't sue the people that work for the government. I mean, they've padded those laws pretty well to protect themselves. You know, the latest incestuous relationship that just happened is Julie Gerberding, who is the former head of the CDC for like 8 years, resigned last year. And then she, according to the rules of government, if you've worked, you have to have resigned for 366 days. It has to be a full year before you can take a job inside of industry. Well, you know, about 367 days after her resignation, Julie Gerberding, who is head of the CDC, has taken role of being one of the leading, being the heads of one of the major vaccine divisions for Merck. She's head of Merck Vaccine International. So she left the CDC, and now she's gone right over to Merck to promote the MMR vaccine, Gardasil, hepatitis A. I mean, all the other vaccines that are made by Merck. I think that is a travesty, and I think that that should be absolutely illegal. However, it's not, because they have made the rules so that it's perfectly okay for people that are even high up, visible government officials to march right over across the aisle and to get in bed with the drug companies. So if you want some accountability issues, those are some people that you should go after in terms of accountability.
Absolutely. You often see that in so many different areas, just like in the financial situation, you'll see someone come out of one of the major corporations, and then the next thing you know, they're involved with something major on Wall Street, and then they're in government, maybe in a cabinet or in a key position, and then back to Wall Street. And I mean, it's just amazing to see all that happen. Or like you said, with, you know, in one of the drug companies, and then in a government position, and back there or back to some other corporation. I mean, it's just so incestuous. It's unbelievable, you know, what's going on there. I would say one thing that just popped up as far as somebody like you, Michael, that has this passion burning for holding these people accountable and for us knowing who they are, probably with a little research, you can find out who are the CEOs of these companies. Do a little searching, you know, find out who's on their board, who are their top execs, and put those names out so that people know who they are. Maybe see where they were before. Were they somewhere in government? Were they here? Were they there? Is there something really snaky about their path, where they've been and where they go after that? So that would be real good. That would be a good service if you or someone else took that on. We've got Doralee, Centennial, Colorado. Why would the military personnel be used as guinea pigs when the government wants them to fight wars? Are they also using the students in military colleges as guinea pigs?
You know, that's a great question, because I've often wondered that. Why would they take the youngest and the healthiest in our country, the strong and the brave young men and women who are supposed to be there fighting and keeping us safe, why would they risk giving them, like, the anthrax vaccine? And if you ever go out to the military websites and look at all of the vaccines that these kids get, it's scary, because they even get the vaccines that aren't even approved for use in the U.S. They get they are used minimally in the U.S. Things like the oral cholera vaccine and the typhoid vaccine and yellow fever vaccine that requires 2 injections, and the anthrax vaccine that isn't even used in the general population here. I mean, they get even more vaccines than what the rest of our kids do. Which, by the way, there's 2 points. I know we're getting to the end of our hour here. There's 2 points that I definitely want to bring up. These are numbers that I think everybody should memorize. Children today, if they get every vaccine that's recommended and required, that they will get 69 vaccine antigens and 69 vaccines injected in about 30 shots by the time they're 6 months of age, and 113 vaccines by the time they start kindergarten. Memorize those two numbers because they're jaw-droppers for people that don't know that. 69 vaccines and 113 vaccines by the time they start kindergarten. 69 at 6 months, 113 at 5 years. And those 113 vaccines are given in about 27 shots. Remember those numbers. The second thing is that every state in the country has a vaccination exemption, all of them. Every state have a medical exemption, so if you've got a lot of illness and your child's not healthy, try to find a doctor that'll write an exemption for you. Or if you've had a previous reaction, you need to try to get an exemption. All states except Mississippi and West Virginia have a religious exemption. Some of those states, it's harder to exercise religious exemption than others, but know your laws and know that is available in all states except West Virginia and Mississippi. And in 19 states, there are what's called a philosophical exemption, which means you've looked at the information, you as a parent think that the risk of the vaccine is greater than the risk of the illness, and so you are opting out of vaccination, which means there's usually a form that you have to file with the school, and all the school systems can have a little bit different rules. Some school systems let you sign one time, and that's good, K through 6, and then junior high and then high school, you have to sign another one. Some school systems want you to sign them every year. Some school systems want both parents to sign them. So that is sort of a regional thing, but there's 19 states that do not have that have philosophical exemptions where your children are not required to have one single vaccine in order to go to school. So if you get told by somebody or get told by your doctor, oh, well, you got to get these vaccines if you're going to get them into the school, no, you don't. Know your laws and work really hard to keep your kids from getting vaccinated.
Okay. I'm wondering, I know we've got, we actually have more questions, but if your time is such that you need to attend to some other things, I understand. Do you have a little more time to address a few more questions, or is your schedule?
I could go about 10 more minutes, I think.
Oh, great. Okay. I really appreciate that. I don't want to, you know, prevail upon, you know, time that's not available. One thing I would say right now, if you would you give out your contact information? I know that people are going to want to go to whatever websites you have and utilize contact information.
Sure. It's my website is drtenpenny.com, drtenpenny, T-E-N-T-E-N-N-Y, drtenpenny.com. The clinic's website is osteomed2.com, which is osteomed2.com. And my Facebook page is facebook.com/vaccineinfo. And I just recently started another Facebook page. It's called Dr. Tenpenny on Breast Health, that we're going to be talking about all sorts of things that have to do with women's health and breast health on my Facebook page. You can also find me on MySpace. Both of the drtenpenny.com and the osteomed2 websites have stores, and where we sell our books and DVDs and the vitamin D and supplements. And I appreciate your patronage because that allows me to take time off to do things like this, like webinars, to keep people informed. That helps to support the employees that I have behind me that help to make this work possible.
Well, that really comes through strongly, and I appreciate that because I can tell that you're not just out doing this to make a buck. You're really, it's a cause for you. It's a passion burning in you. We have if someone is not, say they're not online, maybe they don't have a computer or they're not internet savvy. Is there any type of number they can call or other way to make contact?
For vaccine information, you can call 440-239-1878. That's 440-239-1878, and speak to my assistant. Her name's Annette. And you can call for information at the clinic. You can call 440-239-3438, and I'm located in Cleveland, Ohio, so that's Eastern Standard Time.
Oh, great. Okay. And we have, I'll just roll through these as quickly as possible. We have Samantha in Pueblo, Colorado. Are there any vaccinations that you would give your kids without, let's see, my daughter is almost two and hasn't had any except the H1B, I think that's what it is, at birth without my knowing.
So the question is, would I give my kids any vaccines? Absolutely not. And there would be no, absolutely not. None of the routine vaccinations would I give any of them. I really believe in health from the inside out. And if you go and spend any time on my Facebook page at all and listen to all of the parents who talk about things like, there was a post today that was one parent that said, I have three children. My first child was fully vaccinated. My second child was partially vaccinated. My third child has no vaccines. And that third and youngest one is healthier, smarter, and more active than any of the three, and than all the rest of them put, all the rest of us put together. Never been on an antibiotic, never been sick. Always does good, you know, does good in school, is easy to get along with, does not have aggressive behavior. There are thousands and thousands of parents out there with unvaccinated children that can attest to the fact that they are healthier than any of their vaccinated kids ever would have ever been.
Wow. Okay. Rose in Huntington Beach asks, doesn't the medical profession find it odd that under the Obama administration, they are focused on forced vaccinations and touting them 100% safe, even though they're untested so the pharmaceuticals and stockholders can get wealthy, and simultaneously forcing Americans to buy health care insurance against their objections so the for-profit health care insurance providers can get wealthy? I wonder how many Congress members own stock in the health care industry and the pharmaceutical companies. Good question.
Well, the first part of that, don't doctors find it odd? No. I mean, that's what doctors believe in. They were taught in school that vaccines are safe, effective, protective, and harmless, and that's all there is to it. And so are they supportive of these mandates? Absolutely. And are they surprised by them? Not at all. And how many of them own stock in the pharmaceutical companies? Probably all of them. I mean, pharma, you know, the pharmaceutical industry, I mean, if you were just an investor, I mean, there's nothing insidious about that. There's nothing sinister about that. I mean, if you're an investor and you have a particular investment portfolio, you're going to have stocks in the pharmaceutical industry because they always perform well. And so the reason to invest in the stock market is for the stock prices to go up. So there's nothing sinister about that. Really, it's just that do they all have stocks in there? Yes. The question would be how much stock do they have in a particular industry? And I think that some of that is protected. You know, I'm going to have to go because this is the phone
sure.
call that I was waiting for. So thank you to everybody.
Thanks. Really
thanks
appreciate
for having
it. Me. We'll have to have you back sometime.
That sounds great. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank
bye-bye.
You. Everyone, I just wanted to say that I wanted to give you a little bit of an idea, a little bit of a taste of what we have coming up. We have tomorrow, we're going to have back again Big John Lipscomb, and that will be at the same time. He's going to talk about how will patriots best prepare for what is about to hit us. And I think you'll really enjoy him. John's a lot of fun, has some good information. And then on Thursday, because this is a new year, right at the start of a new year, 2010, Igor Malevsky, I've known him for a while. In fact, he's one of our advertisers. But he's going to show you how that you can start 2010 off very quickly and easily establishing excellent credit while erasing all debts. And he that's actually true. He's able to assist you to accomplish that. And I think you'll find it very interesting, and you can get a lot of good information and ask questions on those. So both tomorrow's and Thursday's, I hope that we have a lot of interactive questions and participation that'll make it a lot of fun and very informative for all of us. So with that, thank you, everyone, for being a part of this today. And look for the recording to be posted at republicmagazine.com/webinar shortly after the webinar. And with that, we'll look forward to seeing everyone tomorrow. Have a wonderful rest of the day. Goodbye.
The moderator has left the conference.